Wild West Show on Kayak Fishing Radio. It's Friday, March the 2nd, 2012, and we are here in our new time slot for the second week in a row. That's 8 p.m. Pacific and 11 at night on the East Coast. I'm your host, Dennis Spike, joined by co-host Isaac the Nothing Miller up in Portland. What's shaking, Isaac?
Oh, man. You know what? Every time I hear that intro, I can't help but play a little air guitar.
It couldn't have been cued better. You know, it was cued just perfectly this time. There was no dead space on that. And quality internet radio you're getting here, listeners. Thanks for tuning in. We are going to have a little round table of anglers on the switchboard. You can phone in to 714-816-4727 if you want to talk about kayak fishing or you have any questions on the sport. You can log on online on kayakfishingradio.com. Go right through the website. You can participate in the Flash chat room. And a lot of people jump on that chat room. As well, the show is archived, and we appreciate you all tuning in later in the week and listening to what we had to say on the show. And we'll give a few reports going around. Unfortunately, not much to report. But there's some good prospects.
Maybe not in your neck.
Definitely not in my neck of the woods. There's female crab city around here. But we got some prospects coming up. We'll hear from Isaac, see what's going on in the great Northwest. And I did some loose surveys this week on one of the West Coast internet websites, the NorCal Kayak Anglers, and I had a couple of questions, and a lot of it has to do with how we get our information on fishing and, more importantly, how we get our political information on fishing, which I really believe right now is vital to the survival of recreational sport fishing as a traditional American pastime and a wholesome family activity. That said, Isaac, what do you got for us?
Well, you know, this is the best time in the world to be living anywhere.
It's March, man. March is a magic month.
March madness, and I'm not talking about college basketball. You know, spring Chinook salmon season is where it's at right now. Fish are still showing up in low numbers at the moment, but they are here. I'm getting reports from a couple of guides that I know. They're picking up a fish or two every trip.
Those are all the cohos, right?
Chinook, the king.
Chinook salmon.
Yeah, the big boys. Good size fish so far this year. Fishing is only going to get better from today on.
That's great.
Yeah, got to be excited for that. Like I said, I'm getting reports daily of people catching fish. The angler effort isn't as big just yet as it has been in years past. But go fishing right now. Do it.
You know, when it comes to tourist destinations, too, I mean, for the outdoorsman, the salmon fishing is such an incredible opportunity, and it's one of those great domestic opportunities. You're not flying into another country. The scenery is spectacular. There's so many other things to do besides getting out, but you'll spend a lot of time on the water. For kayak anglers, too, you know, it's you get those cheap flights for where you're going, and rental kayaks abound. There is a little section, and it's growing, of anglers who are looking for those key opportunities, who have the opportunity to jump and run when the fish are biting. And I'm hoping to get on that opportunity within the next 6 weeks, because I think it's prime time to take a trip up north.
It is the best time. You know, we have if you're flying into town, you haven't kayak fished before, check out Groundswell Kayak Fishing. .com. That is Ron Sauber. He's a past guest of the show. He is the local kayak fishing guide. Great guy. Definitely knows. He's lived here his entire life, so he knows the local fishing scene. I mean, I wouldn't doubt if he smells the first salmon coming up the river. I mean, he knows what's going on.
I was cruising websites the other day, and I got to interject this while we're dropping what sound like great guide names. There's a kid in San Diego who fishes La Jolla for yellowtail and white sea bass. And he pretty much fishes year-round, so he's got a good key dial-in on the bite. He knows the structure. He knows about home guard yellowtail. And he is selling a remarkably inexpensive day of guiding. From sunup to sundown, guarantees you a fish. So if you don't get a yellowtail the day you go out, you can come out with him and fish another time for free and get that fish.
Nobody does that.
And I got to tell you, his rate is half of what my rate is to take you out fishing for the whole day. A little over a couple of hundred bucks. It is an unbelievable. And his name is Josh Pruitt. I think he I don't know if he owns a store or if he works through a store down there called Bike and Paddle, I think. But Josh Pruitt, do you know the name?
I know the name, yeah.
Okay. That's what I get for not reading forums. But boy, and what an incredible service. And I've heard his name, you know, a few times in the past, but not with a real high profile. And I hear he really gets on the fish. That's what everybody tells me.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you're in the area and you're looking to rent a kayak, demo a kayak, great option, Alder Creek Kayak and Canoe. The best part is with Alder Creek Kayak and Canoe, you can walk out of the store, put the boat right in the river from their store, and you are a 3-minute paddle
from
fishing grounds for a
second. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. And that's the Alder Creek shop?
Alder Creek. Yep.
Yeah, I've known about that shop forever.
Yep. So they got some good stuff going on there. Like I said, they're right on the water. Next Adventure Paddle Sports, also here in town, they've got a good rental fleet as well.
You know, it's surprising how many people through the course of the year who come out to guide with me are guys who are coming to town for business and look ahead and, you know, oh, what could I do kayak fishing? And they find that opportunity, man. You just got to show up with a one-day license and we'll bring that for you. And a lot of it is that, you know, that work/tourist kayak fishing thing where guys, and they come from everywhere. I've had them from inland. I've had them from all the coastal regions. You know, guys coming out from Pennsylvania and Iowa and New England. What was I going to tell you about all this stuff? Oh, I was going to tell you that we've got salmon. We'll be starting to fish. First of all, they're doing studies. The scientists, the biologists are out there with fish and game. And they're doing some fishing. And they're finding those jacks. What are those, the 2-year-old salmon?
Yep.
I think that's what they are. And they have some pretty good numbers. Not anywhere near what they need to be and historically, but from what they're seeing right now, we're going to have at least as much of a salmon season as we had last year on my coast. That's the central north region. And I'm really excited about it. And it should be like around the second week of April that they open it. Now, around here, you can just run down to the mouth of Bodega Bay. And given the right conditions, because you'll get a little bit of protection before you get completely out there, given some good conditions, which is basically very little wind and no big swell coming out of the west or the north, you can paddle around the buoys, you can paddle out in front of the esteros and catch some really impressive coho salmon. And,
nice.
Yeah, it's exciting. It's exciting. And, you know, it's been a long time. We haven't been able to fish around here with any success. Since they closed the Rockfish and Lingcod, and that was at the last day of the year. And it seems like a much longer time, but it's only been a couple of months.
Sometimes that's long enough.
It, you know, but the truth is, it's like a 5.5-month closure. And I was talking with somebody today, and, you know, it's funny. In my career, I've been able to pretty much stay off of forums. And one of the reasons is, you know, I say that like it's some kind of an advantage. And sometimes when I try to participate on forums, I think I'm right that it is some kind of an advantage. There were a lot of, of course, I forgot exactly where I was going with that, Isaac, but I'm sure I'll get back to it. I did some rough studies this week, some rough surveys. And I was wondering what people read. And I know we've talked about it on the show before. Isaac, what do you read up there? Do you have the Fish Sniffer for a fishing hunting magazine?
No, not that I know of. The biggest up here, I mean, we've got Sam's Trout Steelheader. Of course, that's, I mean, everything in the Northwest is salmon, trout, or steelhead.
You know, I talk so much about where we're going with our social, political, and social economic thinking towards the fisheries. And I look at historically, you know, what kept anglers informed. I mean, I grew up reading Western Outdoor News and Outdoor Life and, you know, both regional and national publications. And now I'm pretty much down to reading Sport Fishing Magazine and depending on newsletters and announcements from some of the lobbying organizations, especially KeepAmericaFishing.org, United Anglers, and the like. And I did a loose survey. I asked some anglers on an internet website. Oh, yeah, that's what I was telling you about, how, you know, sometimes it's very difficult to participate on these forums. And but while when I started the first kayak fishing forums back in 1997, they've matured considerably. You know, there are only a handful of great sites, and we have a couple of them here on the West Coast with NCKA and Northwest Kayak Anglers, where people really get along. One of the loose surveys I did was, what do people read? And I did it in two places. I did it on that website, and I did it to an email angling group that I belong to called the Poets. This is a group I talk about that we hooked up about, it's probably 15 years already, a group of up to 50 anglers, most of who all own their boats, most of who in the heyday fished once a week at least. And we network the bite via email. It's not really a group or a club or anything like that. It's not a club. It's more like a group of people networking the bite. And we made some friends amongst each other. And once every year or so, get together and do a charter, get a handful of them together. And we've had some great epic trips together through thick and thin, you know, as the fishery recovered, or certain fisheries are recovered, especially in Southern California and Mexico. And what was most amazing to me was online, where I reached what I believe to be a somewhat younger generation of recreational anglers. Few of them subscribe to any print publications, and many of them believe strongly that print publications are on their way out and that all the information they will get is online. And then the more veteran group, the older guys, on the Poets, came back, and while some of them still do keep subscriptions, the number of them that had canceled or not canceled, had declined to renew their Western Outdoor News subscription after probably a couple decades of reading it for a lot of them, really, really blew me away. And they claim they don't get any other fishing publications. Now, I understand guys getting older, getting further away from the sport and everything, but I don't think, even if I slowed down in my fishing, that I'd be able to get away from the management, the politics, the future, the consciousness of what's going on politically with the fisheries, especially what I know. And that's something I would have expected out of every one of the Poets, or most every one of the Poets. And it seems like the level of apathy has reached them. So how do we get reached? I have a big fear that if people depend on going online for information, that they're only going to get some information. And that a bigger fear, and I think we're going to see this in a rebounding of the publishing industry, because the publishing industry has taken a big hit. And I'm not just talking about advertising, which is taking the biggest hit of them all, but just the fact that we don't go to the newsstand, we don't just subscribe to as many publications, and a lot of people don't subscribe at all and don't read. I think that the individual want, especially coming from anglers, of being able to put a magazine or a paper in their hand and read information, you know, that isn't another internet article, is going to come back. But I think what's also going to come back, or what's going to come around, is that online, and you've noticed this, Isaac, when you've read other websites, other website forums. When you're reading other website forums, you'll see people who put up hundreds, sometimes thousands of contributions, of posts on internet, on kayak fishing forums, and then one day they hit a wall. They don't want to answer the same question again that they've been asked 100 times by people entering the sport. They don't want to challenge other people's opinions or have theirs challenged, and they absolutely hit a wall. And all of a sudden, after, and sometimes years, after years of really worthy contribution to growing a website or a region and a community of anglers being a hander, they just hit a wall, and in a lot of cases are never seen again. And I have a feeling that the whole internet thing, as far as gathering media and gathering information, I think people are going to do that. And to be frank, since it is a fishing show, but we'll keep it family, people aren't sitting on the John reading their laptops.
No.
You know, and I know what's in that basket, and it's mostly fishing.
You know, it's I am someone that has been through that, where I have spent so much time and so much energy answering every question, sharing all the information that I have, and then one day just said, you know what, I can't share anymore. You know, and it's not out of spite. It's not me saying, you know what, I've already given you all the answers, I'm not giving you anymore. It's just I've gotten tired. You know,
this is a natural thing. There's no regret or blame or anything in that. You know, the internet is such a new thing. And being able to contribute for people who have it in them, but you realize at some point you realize that, first of all, you've answered all these questions. There's a frustration because people are lazy. They don't want to search back for the information they're looking for. And contributors, even though they do it for years, most of them hit that wall. It's like, I can't answer the same question again. It's on there. You know, let somebody else do it. So this is a natural thing. This is not a personal, or even if it is a personal thing, it's not a personal thing against any anglers, against wanting to make a contribution, against a website. Huh. This happens. This happened with the first kayak fishing website and every kayak fishing website that's followed. That's a natural progression. That guys who publish websites are well to know about that.
Right. See, what happens, you know, in a print publication world, you're relaying information once a month. You know, it's easier to not lose sight of what you're trying to accomplish. Whereas on a web-based forum or news site, it's every day. And it's the every day that makes things get really kind of dull for the person that's been around for a while. You know?
I absolutely agree with that, you know, and it's websites, it's contributions, it's events, it's what everybody does, you know. I've seen the same thing with pro staffers. It's like, this isn't worth a boat and a T-shirt. I just want to fish. You know, I think that's really what it boils down to, too. So my whole point from the whole raising that whole mess is that I really think that the print publications are important. I really don't think, and not just the regional ones. You know, Sport Fishing Magazine is my all-time favorite. Doug Olander, this sport is, when he retires, this sport is going to have some pretty big shoes to fill, because Doug Olander, the editor-in-chief of Sport Fishing Magazine, has a real deep care and concern in his heart for recreational anglers. And he's able to, the magazine gives him the room and gives him the pages to send a message across that gives the readers a national perspective on angler issues. And, you know, it's so much easier. I've been to so many states where, whether it's the recreational or the commercial fishermen, they only know about their issues. And I've always thought that's a big part of why we get into such trouble in our fisheries, because we're not opening our eyes. We've got tunnel vision. We're just looking at what's going on around us, while what's going on around us has usually happened in other fisheries. And I saw that a lot in Florida with the commercial shrimpers and, what was it, shad fishermen or something like that. Excuse me. And anyway, having that consciousness, and I just think that we're going to lose it online. That is, you know, if publishers needed a reason, a pitch to readers to sell their product, it's to communicate what's important, because you're not going to get it. You're just not going to get it online. And I'm afraid that the human condition, that people are going to soften, and where today they say, I get everything I need online, in 6 months or a year, they're going to be telling you they don't look at it too much.
Right.
You know? And I got to tell you, that thing shows up in the mail. I'm excited, you know? I'm excited to see the pictures in a good magazine layout. You know, I read somebody's post in response to my inquiry for people's impressions. And he said, I subscribed to one magazine that I subscribed to when I was young with more money. And he goes, I know more about walleye fishing, although I've never fished for walleye, than most people on the planet. And but he said he also gets Sport Fishing magazine. And he likes reading about faraway places, exotic sport fishing. You know, and Doug Olander, I got to tell you, he has covered his share of the sport of kayak fishing since it started. And he himself has got a fair number of fishing kayaks in his garage. I've been out fishing with him. He definitely fishes kayaks. And I fished with him in Florida. And so that's my whole point, Isaac. I don't mean to rant and rave as I do for nearly a full hour every Friday night. But it's important, and I hope that anybody listening, that you'll be encouraged to drop the 20 or 35 bucks on a subscription to a good print rag that has journalists and represents the area, whether they're national or regional, represents the area you fish in. Because I believe this is the main line to the lobbyists and the people and getting our message across that, no, we want our kids and our great-grandkids fishing in the future.
Yeah, you know, and going back to great publications, you know, for people in the Northwest, one of the best publications is Northwest Sportsman Magazine. And the great part about that, there are two regular kayak fishing contributors. You'll find it at the back, towards the back of the magazine. We have who does that these days? Bryce up in Seattle and Mark here in the Portland area. They alternate back and forth every month.
Now, where do you buy that? At the tackle store? Or?
You can subscribe to it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And how often does it come out?
It comes out monthly.
Very cool.
Yeah. And like I said, there's a right at the back, there's a every month, there's a new kayak fishing.
You know, I used to depend on Western Outdoor Magazine. Did you ever see that one?
Yeah.
But, you know, not published anymore.
Right. I was wondering about that.
So, couple issues after the great editor, Lou Carpenter, man, and it tanked. That's what happened. But, again, that's been, you look coast to coast and around the world, that has been the fate of a lot of print publications. And, you know, it's hard. It's hard to compete. And I really question the value. I mean, so much, billions and billions of dollars is going into website advertising, and which basically amounts to all those banners that we see. And I got to believe very few of us ever react to when we thumb through pages. But that has taken away a lot of jobs from print advertising. The whole online thing has killed classified ads. And so it's a changing landscape for reaching the people. But I think that we have so much to lose from the outdoorsman perspective by not being kept aware. And the best way to be kept aware is by having it roll into your mailbox every week or every month. And I'm going to grab a copy of Northwest Sports Magazine. I can't wait to read it.
Cool. Well, while we're here, we do have another caller on the line, area code 858. Who we got on the line?
So you guys should recognize the phone number by now. It's Paul Leibowitz.
I knew that one.
Okay.
Happy How's Friday, going, Paul.
Yeah, happy
Should
Friday to you guys.
In the chat room?
you're talking about outdoor rags. I think I sensed it.
We are.
Yeah. Well, you know what my feeling about that is you're not going to get that same kind of picture from the mainstream media as we've seen with this whole Richards mess. So I definitely encourage people to take a subscription to their local outdoor rag, whatever it might be.
You know, and then there's a good point, too, there, because it depends on what you're reading, and what you're reading might not be what you want to be reading. It might not be our perspective. That Dan Walters from the Sacramento Bee, he's got a pretty good pen going there, Paul.
Oh, man, I wish I'd written that. He summarized that whole situation, that sorry mess in Sacramento.
In what, about three paragraphs?
Beautifully.
Yeah, it was a very articulate statement.
Five. But the interesting thing is, this is a guy who is a political writer. He often doesn't come down our way on
that's true
hunting and fishing issues, and he can, you know, he can smell the stink of hypocrisy, and he called it out. It's just that obvious.
Yep. More credit to our cause. Where is it all sitting right now?
Oh, we're still in limbo. It's really become a big national issue. He's got the NRA and the National Shooting Sports Foundation, Keep America Fishing, and a lot of other sporting interests weighing in and supported Dan Richards.
Right.
On the other side, it seems the Humane Society of the United States has just a tremendous pull in the California state legislature.
That's a scary thing, Paul.
I would encourage people to look beyond their feel-good message to see what they really do, 1% of their budget or less.
We've had a whole show on the Humane Society.
Okay.
Well, maybe we know what they do. They're not the good guys.
They
got a lot of power in our state, huh?
Yeah, they do. They do, absolutely. And I want to point out, again, Jared Huffman. He's not shown a lot of political courage here in handing this hot potato off to his Southern colleague, Ben Wesos, down in my area, and we're very ashamed of him. Anglers and hunters got to remember where that guy is coming off on this and nail him for it.
And how do we do that? By making those calls?
Well, you can make the calls, but he's probably going to give you a snotty, condescending answer if you get one.
Yeah.
Because guys at North Cal Kayak Anglers have been all over him. They were making posts on his Facebook page. They banned him.
Yeah, I made a contribution on there. He banned, you know, that. What kind of democracy is that, huh? So his Facebook page is all about his opinion and nobody else's.
Yeah, he doesn't want to hear about constituents
that don't go along with his opinion. It's an amazing thing. It's an amazing thing, and this is where, you know, we're lions in a den. We're one lion in a den of wolves here, and we got to roar really, really loud because the direction things are going. And Paul, I know you are working fruitlessly on this as a career. Seemingly fruitlessly, but it will all pay off. I promise you. You've got my personal guarantee. You've got my personal guarantee. I've been guaranteeing you that for years. And but I really think that we're at a turning point right now, and we're at a make and break right now, where we are social politically with our right to fish and the right. And we're not even talking about grandkids now. We're talking about our kids. We're talking about our rights in years down the road. And we're at a turning point right now because it is so far out of hand. It is so subverted by preservationist interests that we have to roar really, really loud or we're going to get shut out. And I published it somewhere the other day. Anybody who thinks that we're not getting shut out already has got their blinders on and fully in denial.
I couldn't say it any better.
Well, thank you.
I want to ask you guys a question that's maybe a little more entertaining. So I had somebody call me up today and say that they got a hold of an RTM boat over at Clear Lake, and they like it a lot. And I know you've got a demo day coming up. This was, look, I've been in one RTM. It was a K Largo. I will tell you, it wasn't really to my taste. It's kind of a big man boat.
It's too big for you. Yeah, it's way too big for you.
Yeah. So.
No. They're hot. We're digging it. You know, it's funny. It's getting a very slow start because we dumped a bunch of boats into the warehouse, and it's like, okay, we need some dealers. So a handful of guys have picked them up. They're absolutely loving them. But we really think that, you know, an RTM is really into the sport. So we're starting to see them pop up at the tournaments and all of that. And I appreciate the lighter topic. But if you didn't know, Paul, this is the dark hour when I get on the radio show. I am trying to turn anglers into a severe sense of consciousness. However, I did need to know one thing from you, Isaac. What is the hot, sustainable seafood pick for us this weekend in the markets? I figure if they're flying it into Portland or out of Portland, it's going to be available to listeners everywhere.
Right.
What do we got? Is it shrimp? Is it fish?
You know, it's not what's right now, but I'm talking 2 weeks from now. Fresh.
It's going to be salmon, isn't it?
No, actually.
Uh-oh, tell me.
Fresh wild Alaskan halibut.
That.
Halibut comes before salmon, so yes.
Halibut comes before salmon, something I should know.
Just by a week or so. So I'm stoked about that.
Those fish come down fresh?
They will come down fresh.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. The best fish market starts at the airport.
That's right. Yeah, super excited about that. Like I said, that's just a couple of weeks away. So, like I said, halibut comes before salmon. Salmon's coming the first run of Alaskan Chinook salmon. Starts right behind the halibut, just right behind the halibut. So I'm selling off my freezer stock of salmon right now.
There's something you can't do in California.
Yeah. I've got Chinook salmon, wild Alaskan Chinook salmon for $10 a pound right now.
Oh, so, Neptune's Kitchen, man. Neptune's Kitchen. Paul, we really appreciate your calling in. You know, these issues are just so hot and so vital to everybody right now. And I think about so much. You know, I want to do something with the kayaks pretty soon. We do a lot, as much as we can, to support Heroes on the Water, to go to the different events and get our name out and promote the sport and get people into it. But we forget one of the tenets of growing fishing is all the Take the Kids fishing programs. And I remember coming into the sport back in the mid-90s, and I kind of looked at that, and they seemed like a bunch of old dudes on boats who didn't want to work really hard and wanted to give something back to the fishery. And I initially discounted their contribution until a few years into it, when I realized what was happening, again, socio-politically, with fishing, and I realized how important the Take a Kid Fishing days are. And I think we're going to have to hook something up at one of the lakes where they do some stocking and get the kids out. You know, some of the boats we've got in the fleet right now, you can put four people on them. get them out there, paddle around, and introduce more kids to fishing. Because it's a great part of Americana, it's a great wholesome activity, and there are a lot of people, I don't want to say a majority, but obviously a very vocal minority, who would really like to see our right to fish completely outlawed, and have taken major steps to seeing that happen. Not too far from the truth, huh, Paul?
No, not at all. And if I could put my other hat on, and I try to keep the two separate, but you know, if you've got an event to take kids fishing, kayak fishing, let me know. We want to publicize that over at Kayak Angler Magazine.
Good, good, good. We know that you guys are doing a good job, too.
We're all over the Heroes on the Water thing, and I have a huge respect for that as a veteran. I know these guys need all the help they can get. And water really is a healing element.
When I went to acupuncture school, it was one of the main elements. And people in Western society have no idea how important the water is. However, you probably shouldn't be sleeping on a waterbed if you want the optimum health. That said, listeners should all know that Paul is the editor of Kayak Angler Magazine, hands down the best publication that's published for the sport. And it'll give you everything from walleye to marlin. And they're doing a real good job. They're taking a much stronger journalistic approach to informing, advising, and educating their readers on what's going on in the fisheries, which is important if they want to be publishing a magazine 20 years down the road. And we certainly want you to be, Paul. Yes, Paul, you'll never retire.
Well, we've got at least 20 or 30 years left of work.
It's all good.
I need to come up and see you guys.
Have you had a day out lately, Paul?
Not since the Richard story broke, unfortunately.
That's been
taking over my life.
Good.
Yeah.
Thanks for being there, buddy. Thank you very much for being there. And there isn't an angler out there that doesn't appreciate whether they know it or not. But we're spreading the word through everything that we do. And I think that's what's so important, that everybody who reaches just one more angler spread the word on conscientiousness and taking some responsibility for what's going on with them locally on their fishing scene.
Well, I think our guys and gals are actually quite active. I think a lot of support.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about that. There's no doubt about that. And I got to say that since day one, kayak fishing has had a much higher profile than the sport itself. Now it's getting pretty big, which is making that profile even bigger as it grows. But one thing is for sure, people who will never participate in this sport listen to it, read about it when they see articles, and are excited about it. Kayak fishing excites anglers, and through our reach, that's just another great way, that through our loud voice and our high profile is another great way that if we have a hand in it, we can make that turn to re-educate America and re-educate families and get enough families into it, get enough people actively into it, where we are a significant minority. And I shouldn't say minority, a significant use section. And, you know, I think in the end, I've got to have faith in the human race. When I look at Facebook now and I see completely sensible people that I know posting new comments on this mountain lion issue, you know, these are people who are going to donate a lot of money that's going to end up hurting us. To wildlife, to preservationist causes, and if you don't think the preservationists know that, this is one they do. This is one big orchestrated move, and really quite savvy. You know, I'll be the first to say that the preservationists are a lot smarter and are completely proactive when it comes to getting what they want for the future of fishing. And this is what we all have to think and believe. And if you have that in your head long enough, and you act on it, we will see change, and you'll sleep better. What do you think, boys? Am I just raging here?
I was going to say, as a, you know, a sect of fishing, the kayak anglers probably come second in, concerns and vocalizing become only second maybe to fly fishermen.
But the kayak angler comes first when you talk about ocean fishing.
Without a question.
And what we're talking about here is ocean fishing. Because what we're looking at is only being able to fish in fresh water in the future. And I agree with you, Isaac. The fly angler, the fly fisherman, has a much bigger voice, a much bigger lobby, bigger numbers in every regard. However, they have very little impact on saltwater fishing. And that's where we come in, which puts us right back into number one.
Right.
Stand corrected, fishmonger.
That I do. You know, I, you know, admittedly, I'm not 100% in the know when it comes to Californian politics. But I know you guys have a lot of stuff going on. That's about the extent of it.
And
yeah,
the reason it's so strong. I'm sorry, Paul.
I'm sorry. Yeah, a lot of some of it leaks over the northern border.
Oh, that it does.
Well, not only leaking over that border, but preservationists in every fishery, in every issue, are watching California. Because if things go their way here, it's the foundation for spreading into every other fishery in the country.
Right.
They are watching, and California has a strong effect. And I love this state. I love this state. It is so screwed up for the things that I love. You know. I'm not abandoning ship yet.
I have to admit to feeling quite a bit of resentment about this, and because here we have to talk about this in terms of preservationists, and it makes us, to some people, sound like right-wing kooks. But the fact is we are very much in favor of sustainable stocks. We're conservationists. I feel like these environmental groups have hijacked our vocabulary.
It happened a long time ago, Paul. It happened in the 90s when I started writing about kayak fishing. And I took a call one time after publishing a column from Bill Beebe. And listeners who don't know, Bill Beebe is one of the sage West Coast sport fishing writers from the 50s, 60s, and 70s. And he wrote columns every week for years and years, took strong political stances against ocean and coastal access, was nearly arrested by the Malibu Sheriffs, which is the L.A. County Sheriffs, for testing the supposed rights of a beach homeowner to throw them off their beach when they went perch fishing. And in my column, I called myself an environmentalist because I used to be an environmentalist. And he gave me a phone call after reading that column and asked if that's really, if I shouldn't rethink how I wanted to label myself, and explained to me what was happening in the mid-90s with the extreme environmentalist movement. And they indeed hijacked our title as anglers and guardians of the fishery. They hijacked our title to be environmentalists. And he suggested that being a fishery conservationist, a conservationist, was more along the lines of how I would get favorably recognized by readers. And that is the tag that I went with. But now conservationists are starting to get kind of occluded and evaporate in its strength and its relation to recreational anglers. And when I first heard the word preservationist, I understood where the extreme environmentalist has gone, and that's to that preservationist attitude.
Well, let me suggest becoming a steward of our waters and our fisheries.
Oh, I like it.
May I suggest reasserting our position as stewards of the fishery, because that's what we always have been. If you look at the majority of issues over time, it's been the anglers who came forward, the recreational anglers, because usually we were dealing with commercial overfishing issues or water quality issues and pollution. It was the anglers who have come to the rescue of the fishery, albeit not usually proactively. And we are still the guardians of the fishery through our lobbying groups, through our purchase of fishing licenses, through our writers, and through our actions. We do have that title. We need to reassert it, though.
Don't forget we pay an excise tax on our, a federal one on our tackle as well.
On all of our tackle.
Yeah.
And what we work for as anglers, and Paul stated it very simply and very articulately, we are striving to achieve sustainably managed fisheries here in California and the rest of the Eastern Pacific. And before the MLP implementation got some steam under it after wallowing for 9 years, at that point, California was at a 10-year high for leading the push towards, not only the push, leading the development of recovered, sustainable fisheries in California. Globally, California is the global leader, this one state here on the Eastern Pacific. And now, it's like that didn't even matter because we make our fishery policy based on... Fill in the blank, Paul.
Well, if you're talking about MLPA, it's on a close-it-all philosophy.
Okay, that one works.
Yeah, circling back to what you were talking about, you're absolutely right that there's documented evidence that California has the lowest fishery exploitation rates in the world. And the credit for that has to accrue to the Fish and Game Commission in California and the Pacific Fisheries Management Council on the federal side. There is no more overfishing in California.
When special interest groups get their hands on the ability to legislate the fisheries, which they have, we all lose. And when you can make decisions for the fisheries, which is in direct reference to MLPA, but not limited to it, when you can make policy on the fisheries that do not include the science that we spend millions of dollars on, then there's something terribly, terribly wrong with the system and the people who are loopholing it to get what they want. And that is no fishing for us.
Did you guys talk about this MLPA scientist who's in the pokey for allegedly defrauding, embezzling $900,000 from the Yurok tribe?
You know, I'm aware of it. You're aware of this, Isaac?
No, I missed that.
Give it a quick summary there, Paul.
Oh, I don't have all the facts in front of me, but I could
tell
you.
What was his position
on
the MLPA? He was one of the co-authors.
He was the co-chair of the science advisory team.
There we go.
And I can tell you from my days suffering on the regional stakeholders group in Southern California, trying to keep some of our scarce launch sites open, that we saw a lot of very interesting behavior on the science advisory team, so much so that I'm not exactly surprised that somebody's been arraigned for
criminal
behavior.
So, Isaac, what happened was he was accused of embezzling up to $900,000 from the Kuruk tribe on a project he was working on for them. This is the guy who co-chaired the science advisory committee for the MLPA, who are not our friends, by the way. Obviously, by their actions, that's come out in the press. These were not our friends. So, no, it's a messed up system, and the only way we're going to get it right is by strengthening the angler lobby, the recreational angler lobby.
Yep.
You know, and the funny thing is, they're going to can our rights to fish, this preservationist movement. They're going to can our rights to fish while commercial fishing is going to continue. It's the recreational anglers who are going to suffer long before the commercial guys do. You know, and when this movement gets big enough to impact them, I have a feeling we'll probably start seeing more money pour in from that section. you know, that's going to benefit us too.
I can tell you that down south, the commercial sector has been hurt actually quite hard. You got the lobster guys who are, for the most part, small family businesses.
Right. I know a lot of them. Yeah. A lot of them had half their fishing grounds or more eliminated.
Exactly, and they've been very active in this effort. We worked closely with them, recreational and commercial. And the funny thing is, in California, we just had a stock assessment on these spiny lobster. The thought was, the theory was that they were getting overfished and quite the resources healthier than anybody imagined.
Right. Right. And again, you know, this was a 1-year survey. There is a natural cycle, but overall it's been a very sustainable fishery, the lobster. And even at its worst, when the lobsters are there, just like the crab disappear too. Some years you won't catch lobster. So years of study, years of science is what everything needs. And I'm not saying don't put restrictions out there if there's an issue. But we know that MLP is just a joke and a travesty and not good for anything.
No, regulations work. And one of the downsides of what's happened with the MLPA is now some of our recreational anglers don't trust the regulations anymore.
Don't trust what? Regulations?
Yeah, they don't trust the regulations. They don't trust the motivations. Really poison the atmosphere. But,
oh, you mean
I would encourage
fish and
them
game
to,
regulation?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well,
but I would encourage them to stick with it and definitely stay on the right side.
That's bad thinking. But, you know, Paul, it's a very strong point, eroding trust in our Department of Fish and Game. And I never even really thought about that through all this. I've always been on the side of Fish and Game has had so much of their authoritas stripped from them that they can't manage to do a good job. But the truth is, a lot of the stuff I read coming out of Fish and Game, and I even made a sarcastic post about it, that, you know, some of the press releases that most managers in Fish and Game I talk to are not happy with, you know. But they come out in press releases like a proud announcement, including MLPA. And I don't know what the division is, but I know there are a lot of people in Department of Fish and Game who believe MLPA is absolutely ridiculous and never should have happened.
Yeah, maybe someday we can take that conversation offline and I can give you the view from the inside the belly of the beast and what confidential sources inside the department are telling me.
Would I like what I hear?
No, it's probably a lot like you think.
Yeah, I bet
it
is.
You've got a gold guard that is all about managing a resource. They're stewards. It's really good, Isaac. I love it. And then you've got this new guard that's infiltrated that is all about preservation, locking up the resource.
Well, we got to open their eyes. What's your next fishing trip plan, Paul? Have you got one? You got to be going out to some faraway exotic place.
I might be headed over to Florida here in a few weeks to finally get some flat fishing under my belt. I haven't caught a red or a trout in my life, so I can't wait for this.
It is springtime in Florida right now, and everybody we talk to says they never had a winter. And there are some fish a-chewing, I tell you, and I hope you get out to do that, because you'll have a great, great time. It's kind of like fishing in the western part and in the skinny water. It's kind of like fishing in Jurassic Park. It is really a tremendous and unique fishing experience of any kind, but especially with a kayak. Isaac, I know you got to be heading to the water pretty soon.
Yeah, you know, this weekend's also our lake opener for trout, so I'm definitely going to get out. There's a lot of lakes with some real big trout that are real big, really hungry this time of year.
Yes, they are. They're just starting to feed.
Yeah. And, hey, Paul, if for whatever reason your trip to Florida doesn't pan out, we've got a big plan this summer on yakangler.com to do some fishing trips around ICAST.
Oh, no kidding. Yeah, I'm going to be there. Yeah, I have. I'm always at ICAST, so I'll check that out.
Right. Yeah, definitely. You know, love to have you. And definitely something that we're working on, that's for sure. So,
for what it's worth, I will be going to Outdoor Retailers Summer Show in August and
I'll
coming back
there.
To kayakfishingradio.com to report on every new fishing kayak offering out there.
Hey.
So
yeah.
I'm pretty excited.
I broadcasted from
nice,
Outdoor
Dennis.
Retailer this last year.
That was from Outdoor Retailer last year you did?
Yeah, I broadcasted from Outdoor Retailer.
I remember that. I remember that.
I still owe Isaac a beer.
From
right.
that show?
From that
show.
Oh, that's funny, you
oh,
guys.
From Outdoor Retailer, yeah.
That's funny.
Well,
that's about all
then.
I got going. Unfortunately, I don't have. I talked to Victor Vector today from Headwaters Kayak, and I'm thinking of maybe meeting up with him out on the Petaluma River over on the west end over here, and maybe we can get a sturgeon to chew. We still got a little bit of season left, and it's been a good season for the sturgeon. But that is really the only thing I'm looking at right now. I'm staying busy at my desk here in the fishing business.
Hey guys, thanks for putting up with me for a little bit.
And Isaac, thanks for putting up with me for an hour every Friday night, buddy.
Hey, I enjoy it.
Paul, we appreciate your calling in. You've given us such good information on the sport and what's going on. We look forward to hearing from you next. I want to thank everybody for listening, whether it's live in the chat room or logging on the later archived show. We will be back with you next week at 8 o'clock Pacific Standard Time, 11 o'clock Eastern Time on Fishing the Wild West on kayakfishingradio.com. Thank you all for joining in. Have a good week.